This is Lake Effect on WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for listening today. Through the end of this week, Lake Effect and the WUWM Newsroom are undertaking a comprehensive examination of the state of race relations in Milwaukee. Our series, called Project Milwaukee Black and White, explores many of the issues that have given Milwaukee the reputation of a segregated community. And we're also looking at the efforts underway to bridge the gaps that exist. It's almost impossible to explore the state of race relations in Milwaukee without first understanding how it is that human beings come to perceive race. It's often believed that children don't see race until they're taught to do so. But Aaron Winkler says that's just not true. Winkler is an assistant professor in the Department of Africology at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. She teaches about the effects of racism on individuals and communities, as well as how racial identities are developed in kids. Winkler explains to Lake Effect's Stephanie Lecce just how children learn to understand race, and how, as adults, we rationalize our own perceptions of race. She says the idea that children can start forming prejudices at a very early age can be a difficult thing for adults to accept.
It's such a part of the sort of popular imagination or the popular culture that children are colorblind, children are a blank slate, and unless or until an adult or another person specifically teaches them to notice race or be racist, that it's not natural for them to do that. But in actuality, all of the research we have on the topic says just about the opposite, so that the psychological research, even on infants and toddlers, show that they, A, recognize and are able to categorize people by race non-verbally by as young as 3 to 6 months, and that once they have the verbal skills, that they're actually able to categorize, which is sort of the first step towards stereotyping. You have to be able to put someone in a category before you can sort of stereotype based on that category. That happens shortly thereafter, that certainly by 3 years old. And also in the 3 to 5 year old range, so in the preschool age, is where we see children developing not just stereotypes, but negative prejudices. So in what we call in-group bias, bias towards one's own group and against different groups, groups that are different than one's own. And so psychological study after psychological study show that children by preschool actually have sort of high levels of prejudices. Partially this has to do with sort of the cognitive structures or what's going on in their brains at that time so that they're able to categorize, but they don't have more sophisticated tools to sort of categorize people multiply. So it's sort of like once I know they're in that group, then I make a broad blanket statement about the whole group. So partially it has to do with that. But I think that the takeaway message for adults is that we're actually doing a disservice when we presume that young children don't notice race, because what we do is we put off anti-bias education, and we do it too little too late. I mean, we do very little even at the junior high and high school level, but it should be starting literally with toddlers, which is a hard pill for, I think, a lot of adults to swallow. They're going to be listening to this and say that can't be true.
Well, and that was something else that I was going to ask you, you know, is the idea of being colorblind as something that we teach children a foolish lesson?
The thing about the notion of colorblindness is that it's really a faulty notion. In other words, the way that we're set up to think cognitively is we do categorize, right? It's part of our cognitive structures for a number of reasons. And so what sort of the research on colorblindness says is that it's actually a way to shut down the conversation on sort of what we would call the normalizing of whiteness or the normalizing of a white middle class culture in the United States. And what that means is what's thought of as quote-unquote normal American or quote-unquote normal behavior, culture, practices, dress, language, etc. in the United States is really something that's particular, not universal. It's a particular middle-class white culture and set of practices that's posited as universal. It's posited as normal. Okay, and so what scholars say about colorblindness is when we purport to be colorblind, we're really just feeding into this system that says, I don't notice race, but it really sort of normalizes a particular set of behaviors.
Well, and I wanted to ask you something you had mentioned before. You talked about toddlers being able to recognize their place within a specific category and having starting to develop that bias toward the category in which they're included. And I wonder then how that influences children's perception of race, depending on whether they themselves are white or black or Hispanic or whatever.
Well, it's interesting because we have what's going on internally, biologically and cognitively with a developing child, and then we have what's going on externally with societal norms and societal messages and societal biases and power relationships. For children, particularly in that we're talking about the young, the preschool age, they notice differences, and because of the way their brains are working at the time, they actually will attach meaning to those differences whether or not adults tell them to. So a lot of times when we see young children expressing bias or prejudice, there'll be a reaction from the adults, the parents, the teachers saying, well, I don't know where she learned that. She didn't learn that from me, right? But the truth is that we can see with children that often all they need to see is the way things are, and they can add meaning to that. So as a child, I may say, I have white skin or I have light skin, and the other people in my family and my immediate household have white skin, and it seems like the people that come over to our house have white skin, and so since I'm having at this age this in-group bias, this bias towards my own group naturally, even though no one tells me that people with different skin colors are bad or should be avoided or aren't as good as me, I may attach that meaning simply based on what I'm seeing. And this is where society comes into, because children see the world. They go to stores. They see who works in different kinds of positions at the stores, at the doctor's office. They ride the bus. They see de facto segregation, residential segregation. And whether or not, if there's silence about this, because parents and educators think children can't understand it, then children really do attach their own inferences and meanings to these patterns that they're seeing. And so what there needs to be is actually active conversation in the other direction to sort of explain historical and contemporary power differences, racial inequities, which is something that a lot of people will say, hey, it's ridiculous, children that young can't understand. But all the psychological research says they can understand if it's taught in an age-appropriate way. And in fact, if we don't talk to them about it, that we're just letting prejudices develop untamed.
But certainly there must also be external factors that are influencing how children perceive race.
Yes, absolutely. And this sort of gets to power relationships and racial inequities in society. And this is not just about incomes and jobs being held, although it's about that too. But it's also about very, very subtle images perpetuated in media, in textbooks, you know, even from well-intentioned adults. So if I, as a child, I'm developing this natural bias towards my in-group, but if that bias seems to be reinforced by what I see on TV, by what I hear on the radio, by what I see in my textbooks, by what I see in the world around me, then that sort of reinforces those ideas. So let me give you an example. Now, there was one really wonderful study done by Katz where she followed a group of developing youngsters from 6 months to 6 years, okay? And it was a sample, a relatively large sample, African-American and white children and their families. And they have a number of findings, but one finding was at a certain age, around toddler age, all of the kids, when they were presented with pictures of potential playmates, were choosing playmates. These were playmates they didn't know, were choosing, saying, I would like to play with, and they would choose someone who was their own race. But by around 36 months, and this held up to the 60-month mark, it started to be that both white and black children were more likely to choose a white potential playmate. So that it stayed in group for the white children, but for the African-American children, as they got older, and presumably the author's hypothesis had more of this external societal influence, then more of this sort of bias or what this normalization of whiteness or what Beverly Tatum calls the smog in the air, sort of cultural racism in the United States. As that seeped in, then this sort of notion of whiteness as preferable can also influence children. Now, I don't want to say that does not mean that somehow all children of color are going to have low self-esteem and hate themselves and these. I'm not trying to say that at all. But in response to your question, these societal messages, these subtle and sometimes not so subtle preferences for a quote-unquote white norm can seep into the way a child perceives himself, perceives others.
So then how do we combat that happening? How do we prevent these biases from forming early on? And how do we get children talking about race in a positive way while being cognizant of it?
Right. Well, this is something that developmental psychologists have really been pushing for a long time, but it's not going over well in pop culture because it's so hard to get rid of that folk knowledge or that folk quote-unquote common sense idea that young kids are colorblind, they're a blank slate, they don't understand race, and if you start too young, then you're actually poisoning their minds. So what we really would like to do is, A, start with the conversations as early as possible. Three-year-olds are going to ask questions about these kinds of things, right? Skin color, racial differences, things they observe. And to shush them is a common response, because if a kid asks in a grocery aisle, you know, something about, hey, why does that boy look different than I do? You know, parents get embarrassed and they shh, right? And that all that teaches children is that this is something we shouldn't talk about. It doesn't mean that they stop thinking about it. It doesn't mean that they don't develop the ideas. It simply means that they're learning, okay, I'm not allowed to talk about this. But they're still developing the ideas. So talking about it openly, number one. Now, in an age-appropriate way. The other thing that research shows is that it's important not to scare children. But it's also not helpful to just really talk about only stories with happy endings. Children tend to get a lot of picture books about Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King and important historical figures, but these tend to present the issues to the children in terms of one individual who sort of did something individually and was a hero and everything worked out well in the end. And that really doesn't give children a chance to process the continuing racial inequities and discrimination. This is a reason why local role models, really looking for people who are doing anti-racist, anti-prejudice social justice work in the community, bringing them into preschools, kindergartens, your own home, to talk about the work they're doing. So that kids can sort of get this idea that this is, first of all, not just about individual bad people. We tend to tell kids, don't be mean, you've hurt his feelings, and individual bad behavior, as opposed to putting it in a context of a broader social structure. I mean, adults think about racism the same way.
Really?
It's a few individual crazies who are out on the fringe, and if I'm not a member of the Klan and I don't use the N-word, then I'm not racist, right? And sort of really thinking again, well, let's think more about racial inequity. Let's think more of racism as a system of advantage that systemically and perhaps unconsciously produces advantage for one group of people and disadvantage for other groups of people based on race.
Well, I think that's so interesting. Can you explain a little bit more how racism does exist in the psychology of adults, but then how, as adults, we almost exclude ourselves from participating in that kind of behavior?
Certainly. But again, we think it's bad. You have to be a bad person, right, to be racist. So no one thinks of themselves as racist. And it's actually a little bit easier for society as a whole, and I would argue for white society in particular, if we can isolate it to a few individuals who may even be mentally disturbed and sort of place it there and leave it there. Because then the vast majority of society, and I would argue especially white society, doesn't see themselves implicated in that. But when we look at it that way, instead of how racism really actually functions today, then we don't work on solving the problem. And so there's been a lot of work done on this, and really what sociologists and psychologists argue is that in the pre-civil rights era, that is kind of what racism looked like. It was open, it was on the surface, it was part of our laws, right? And it was out there, right? That is what racism looked like. But what they say is, you know, in the post-civil rights era, that's not a useful way to look at racism, and we won't solve the problem if we look at it that way. Because the way that racism functions now is really as a system of advantage or disadvantage based on race.
Well, Erin Winkler, I really appreciate you coming in and giving us a small glimpse into the psychology behind racial identity and race relations.
Well, it's my pleasure. I feel like we just barely scraped the surface.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Erin Winkler is an assistant professor in the Department of Africology at UWM. She spoke with Stephanie Lecce about how children learn to perceive race and how we consider it as adults. Coming up, how racial separation can be apparent even in areas like music. We'll be back with that discussion after a short break. This is Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio.